Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Friday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well on what has been a wet Friday afternoon. Well, at least for the first half, it was not gloomy at all for Auburn basketball. It's playing right now. We'll keep you updated. Tigers have not scored in the second half. Fortunately, South Carolina's only scored three, but it was a 20-point lead for Auburn at the half. 46-26. We will keep you updated. 46-29 as the game going on. Bill here in the studio. Dan is on his way. Drew is at the controls. And we'd love for you to join in as well. Understand a lot of eyes right now on the SEC tournament where Auburn looking to advance past the first round for the first time since 2019 when the Tigers went all the way through it, four games and won the tournament on their way to a Final Four run. So it's looking like, we had a blowout in the first game, not the blowout that a lot of people may have been thinking, but Mississippi State never trailed, leading Tennessee by as many as 23, and they win by 17 in the opener of the SEC Day 3 of the tournament. So Mississippi State, well, in the tournament, not hurting themselves, probably moving up a notch or so in the seeding, while Tennessee probably can kiss a number one seed goodbye with their loss today. Dalton Connect really held down by Mississippi State. Mississippi State's defense was just suffocating today, and they led throughout, and as I said, never trailed, and they win. Meanwhile, we're about to the under 16 timeout, and Auburn still has not scored in the second half. They led 46-26 at the half. I was thinking about this as I was heading in, and it was halftime. Lamont Paris, the South Carolina head coach, really didn't want to talk much about the first meeting between these two teams when Auburn won 101-61 and led it 50-28 at the half. The only thing he said was, "That's an anomaly. That won't happen again." Well, no, Auburn only led by 20 at the half this time instead of by 22. No, it is a situation where Auburn is not a good match for South Carolina, and the Tigers again, unless they just have a terrible second half, look like they're headed to playing Mississippi State tomorrow in the semifinals of the SEC tournament. Again, we're just under 16 minutes waiting for the under 16 timeout, and Auburn leading it by the score of 48-29. Welcome in, everybody, to the Friday edition of The Drive. We've got all kinds of audio that we can run for you today. A programming note, I was texting with Barrett Salih, who joins us most Fridays here on The Drive at 4:15. He was checking to see if we'd be on the air since he knew that, our network, our family of stations would be carrying the game. And I said, yes, we'd be carrying it. And he thought he'd be able to be on, but he has a family situation that has come up. So Barrett will be unable to be with us here this afternoon. So hopefully we'll have him back next week. But we have some audio from Butch Thompson. Auburn baseball is in Nashville as well, getting ready to open SEC play against the Vanderbilt Commodores. We have some football interviews with coaches and players from this week as the Tigers ready, as they will wrap up their second week of spring football practice tomorrow So we can let you hear some of that as well. And obviously, we'll be keeping an eye here on basketball. A couple of the things we had heard were probably going to happen have now officially taken place. Juwan Howard out at Michigan. And so this is, and I heard Damian Fishback talking about this earlier on the SEC Network, saying you wonder now if schools will take a second thought, they'd have second thoughts about bringing back former players, former beloved players, to be their head coach. Because you've seen Kenny Payne out at Louisville. Who was the other one that he mentioned? There have been three former players that had returned to be head coaches at their alma maters, and it hasn't worked out for them just here recently. But Juwan Howard, of course, member of the Fab Five freshman, coming back and just things not going as well as everyone had hoped there in Ann Arbor. So you've got some big jobs opening. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, who the hottest names are. Nate Oates' name, Bruce Pearl's name came up, you know, when it looked like the Indiana job might open. Nate Oates is a guy who's, was an outstanding high school coach in the state of Michigan, grew up there in the Midwest. You wonder, you know, if Michigan will take a look at him. And it'll be interesting to see who all of the become the hot names here in these job openings, which are coming open. All right, they're at the under 16 timeout, 15:28 to go in regulation, and Auburn with a 19-point lead. Slow start for both teams here in the second half. Well, you know, we sort of got off to a slow start in the first half. Neither team lit it up at the outset. But Auburn had two big runs in the first half. They had an 11-0 run midway through the first half, then it had an 11-1 run right at the end of the first half. And, that will help you to a 20-point lead that Auburn had there at halftime. So 48-29, Auburn leading. One of the keys for Auburn throughout the year has been their ability to limit turnovers. Auburn only had three turnovers in the first half, and one of them was on the technical foul called on KD Johnson. That was a turnover. South Carolina's defense has really not been able to force Auburn into any mistakes. As Dan making it into the studio now.
Yeah, I got caught behind a couple of school buses.
That can happen.
That can happen on a Friday. It seems like a busy weekend in Auburn. There's a lot of stuff going on in Nashville.
Oh yeah,
but it feels like and St. Patrick's Day celebrations going on sort of throughout the weekend. So be aware and be careful out there. What are South Carolina's percentages right now, Bill? You got the box in front.
Yeah, South Carolina's shooting 22.9%.
Yeah, well, that's how you're down 19 with 15 minutes to go.
Hey, Auburn's 1-for-11 in the second half.
Auburn started
1-for-11 in the second half.
Denver Jones had the step back. I think that's the lone Auburn shot.
That's
in the second half.
I mean, it's 3-2 in the second half. But South Carolina's leading Auburn 3-2 in 5-plus minutes of play in the second half.
But just like, and Auburn isn't scoring the way they did in the first game, the one at Neville Arena.
Well, they were almost there in the first half. He scored 50 in the first half at Neville and 46 today.
Yeah, at the moment, Auburn isn't.
Not now.
You know, they're not on the pace they were in the previous game. But South Carolina, just like in the previous game, every single basket South Carolina is attempting, every shot that goes up is contested. Like they got
a screen for a three there and hit it.
It is an announcer's jinx, right there.
It.
But pretty much, I mean, just like and. And that's a team that, if you go back to our analysis of the first time Auburn played South Carolina, that's a team that's sort of waiting for a defense to make a mistake, miscommunication, foul, over the course of the 25-30 seconds that they want to play basketball. If they can force you into mistakes, they can get open looks, they can get drives to the basket, they carved Arkansas up. But Auburn has played, I think, really smart, really disciplined.
First half, they really have. Second, it's been sloppy here in the second half.
But I think defensively, Auburn still makes it difficult on virtually every possession, although South Carolina, I say that.
That was a wide open three that they missed.
Is that maybe the first time in this game South Carolina has had back-to-back open looks
possession?
So, I mean, so maybe I'll stop talking about this because ever since I started, it became a...
Trey Donaldson with a jumper, and he now fills it out. Auburn had 9 different players score in the first half. Yep. Trey Donaldson was the only player that didn't, so Auburn does answer at least with a bucket. They're up 18. 50-32.
And South Carolina is capable of shooting from the outside, so this game is not. I still don't know if it's. Auburn's going to have to still play well to keep South Carolina away, but you want to cut it down from 18 if you're South Carolina, because the closer you get to the end of this one, a number like 18 feels,
Sort of the way it was in the opening game when Tennessee was able to cut a 23-point lead to 12 in about 3 minutes, and they had 5 minutes to go. They were down 12, and I thought Tennessee's really on a roll, but you really have to credit Mississippi State. I thought, Cam Matthews was phenomenal today. I had not seen much of him running the point the way he did today against Tennessee.
That was a really impressive win for Mississippi State, and I know people are, I understand why you view it as an opportunity for Auburn or South Carolina, most likely Auburn, depending on how this game is going. But you view it as an because they're not going to have to play Tennessee, but South Carolina, but Mississippi State.
I don't know that Auburn would have been brokenhearted had they been matched up against Tennessee again, because Auburn felt like they let one get away up in Knoxville.
Right, and this is a Mississippi State team. Auburn beat them the last time they saw them. But I don't know if that was, Mississippi State, like South Carolina, played one of their worst games of the season. We'll see if maybe that's because of Auburn's style. Maybe it's a bad matchup for State. I feel like
Auburn, State feels like they match up pretty well against Auburn. I think.
I think Auburn State's a real good game tomorrow.
I do too.
That's my guess.
And Auburn up 19 as we hit the 13-minute mark, 52-33. I mentioned the Juwan Howard official news. Who is the other guy? The other former player that's out as a head coach as well. Kenny Payne, there's somebody else that I'm blanking on.
I'm thinking about, Stanford just made the change. Former UAB coach at Stanford, Haas is let go at Stanford. He was there about 7 or 8 years. Mike Boynton was let go at Arkansas, at Oklahoma State. You've got
Fish earlier today pointed out the fact that former, beloved former players coming home hasn't worked out so well lately, and it may you may see less of that now.
Ewing was let go a year ago,
right? He didn't mention him
at Georgetown. Chris Mullen came back to St. John's. That didn't work out either.
Seems like there's somebody anyway. Huh. I'm sure we'll hit on it. But anyway, that's a big opening there at Michigan.
There was one at NC State a couple of years ago, right? There was a was it Sidney Lowe?
Was
a beloved former player at NC State, came back, did not really work out for him as the coach. It's happened, unfortunately, in the past. Michigan now making the change. Michigan and Ohio State.
Yeah, how about that?
Both on the market for new coaches, and with the discrepancy in revenue between.
Look out! He's going to take it all the way.
In revenue between Michigan State. Or Michigan, Ohio State, and everybody else, or the Big Ten and the SEC and everybody else. But I think, especially the really revenue generating programs in the, the programs at the top of that list, Michigan, Ohio State, stuff like that. I think they're both in the market to make a really big splashes as far as who they get. How good of a job would you leave for Michigan? For Ohio State?
Michigan is up there.
I think it's a better job than Louisville right now.
There's no question about it. I mean, and they're in the Big Ten.
Well, we argued. There's some question about it. I think we argued with Jason about that a little bit. Jason was
Michigan
sort of
compared. What Jason said is makes a lot of sense. Louisville is a place where basketball can be king. At Michigan, basketball is not going to be king, but it's a pretty dang highly decorated prince. I can tell you that.
Can you win a national championship at a place where basketball isn't necessarily king?
Michigan win a national championship in basketball? Have they done it?
I think probably.
They can.
Can Tennessee or Alabama or Auburn or Florida win the national championship?
I believe now. Yes, the situation is now that yes, they can.
I mean, this season. I just named 4 teams that could go to the Final Four. this year, and I wouldn't say men's basketball is king at any of those programs as a historically
you're right.
Target. Like, so I mean I think it's there is something to be said for, and I think this is where you would, if you want to talk about defining blue bloods in college basketball, some of it is based on success, historic success, recent success. But I think some of it is like what you were just saying, Bill. How many places are there in major college athletics where they can win a national championship in men's basketball and they would rather have one than in football? Like, in general, the most important people.
Well, I don't know. There's some places you listen to some Alabama fans and say, oh, we've won so many football championships. We'd rather have one in basketball now. I mean, you might get situations like that. But when the fan base overall would rather have the basketball than the football, yeah, that's a different story.
Guess, how about this? Superpowers where men's basketball is higher on the priority list than football, right? For like for things like facilities and NIL and things like that. Because I would think it's a pretty short list. And we're talking about places like Duke and Carolina and Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
Kentucky is probably the
Kentucky
top example.
Yes.
Kentucky is the top example in the SEC. UCLA would be in that conversation. I mean, it's a short list of, I mean, those mm-hmm. are the places where you're not talking about, like, yes, those places can have a good football season, but it feels different than it does at the places that try to win at everything or the places that have been historically very, very prominent football programs. Just, you know, having said that, Michigan's still an excellent job. Like, I think they could find just about anybody, especially if they have local ties, you know, someone to mm-hmm. the region. I could see, I mean, Michigan could go in a bunch of different directions. I would be surprised, even though there are really good coaches at the mid-major level, I would be surprised if Michigan went.
Yeah, I don't think Michigan after, I mean, Juwan Howard was a guy that didn't have that proven record at the D1 level. I think Michigan's going to, that's something that will be a must for them this time.
You were on a cruise liner earlier this year, right, Bill?
Uh-huh.
You were on a cruise. All right. Michigan is, as a basketball program, they're a cruise liner. You want someone who's driven one of those.
Yeah, like, that's a pretty good analogy.
You don't want someone who has only had smaller boats.
Yeah, even if it were a tugboat. I mean, not a tugboat or a steamboat. You want somebody who has a large vessel.
Even if you're the best steamboat driver. Yeah. In the world right now, maybe it's a different thing when you move up to something that big, and that's why I could see them going with someone who's, and I don't know what that means, you know, as far as like where they go with it, but someone who has experience at the major conference level. You know, I've seen Mick Cronin's name kicked around for a couple of jobs. UCLA head coach Mick Cronin. I mean, there was talk maybe earlier this year.
Well, he was a Midwestern guy, and there was until he went out west.
There was talk that he's worn out his welcome at UCLA, and he was criticizing sort of the NIL involvement earlier this year.
Did we hear that with Chip Kelly?
We heard that with Chip Kelly.
Yeah.
There's a new AD at UCLA. I do wonder if something could be in the works there. If Ohio State or Louisville or even Michigan really wanted, or Oklahoma State, I suppose, if any of them mm-hmm. really wanted, if they thought Mick Cronin was really the answer, maybe something could be worked out where he would have a graceful exit and UCLA would go shopping for somebody else.
All right, we will. We need to get to our first break. Again, we have plenty of audio. We have baseball audio with Auburn ready to open up SEC play there in Nashville against Vanderbilt. We'll see. I think we may run some of that when we come back, but we'd love for you to join in. You can call us on the Drive hotline, 334-321-1390, and of course that's sponsored by Skybar.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts. I thought that was a replay just now of a lob to Dylan for a dunk. It was, in fact, another drive to the basket and another dunk by our buddy Dylan Cardwell.
Yeah, that's his first bucket. Well, no, he's got a couple of buckets on the day. Picked up three quick fouls, but again, Auburn's depth just appears to be overwhelming.
He's had two straight lobs where, yeah. or two straight baskets, it seems like, where lobs from a point guard. Here's this one. Here's the replay on this one, Bill.
Trey Donaldson has that knack of seeing the guys. That's one of the things Trey does so well. Trey right now on the day, 5 points, four assists, no turnovers. Good game thus far by Aiden Holloway as well. Auburn still with just four turnovers in the game, and they are up 25 with 10.5 minutes to play in the first. In the second half.
Is it true Auburn hasn't won a tournament game
since 19?
Is it since the final in 19 against Tennessee?
Yeah, it's of course amazing. They didn't play 1 year.
20 was canceled.
Right.
And then three straight years where Auburn had been 21, 22, 23, where Auburn had been eliminated
in the first round.
On their first appearance. Yep. And I believe is it A&M has gone to the final 2 years in a
They're
row?
They're looking to try to make it for three straight years championship.
A&M has gone to the final of this thing 2 years in a row. So, I mean,
Got Kentucky tonight.
They've got Kentucky tonight. That's going to feel like a heavyweight fight, too.
Yeah, no
A&M is, I believe, that's one of the teams on the razor's edge of the bubble. Like I think they're
in, but they still don't need things to go south in any other tournament.
If A&M lost tonight to Kentucky, I would predict
Lenardi still got them in, even
yourself,
with a loss.
Brace yourself, Bill. If A&M lost tonight to Kentucky, I think they're in the play-in game.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I think they're looking at the play-in game. I think we could have some really fun play-in game matchups. This year, Indiana State. If you haven't seen Indiana State before, they shoot about as many threes as anybody in college basketball. It's a wacky, very very European five out style, and they will. Seems like people have Indiana State in the play-in game. Love to see what they look like against a major conference opponent with that style. But yeah, should be a lot of fun.
We need to get to that first break. Stick with us here on the Friday Drive.
For air that's cooling.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Friday afternoon. Auburn rolling now over South Carolina. Gamecock score to cut the lead to 27, 69-42 as we hit the 7 minute mark to play in regulation. And I mentioned it earlier. Lamont Paris said the first game was just an anomaly. Well, we've had two anomalies between these teams then. As Auburn just dominating South Carolina. It looks like the Tigers and Mississippi State tomorrow. Mentioned Auburn baseball is in Nashville as well to take on the Vanderbilt Commodores in the SEC series opener for both teams. And a little earlier, yesterday, as a matter of fact, we had a chance to talk to Butch Thompson and a couple of players. I believe Derek Fabian and Will Cannon were the guys yesterday. So we thought we'd let you hear some of the comments from those players as they get ready for the SEC opener tonight.
I know this is a pretty process-oriented deal, this whole baseball thing, but just when you guys are going into conference play, you know, as guys who have both done this in the SEC, I mean, how much do you feel the intensity or just is there any switch in the dial as far as, you know, heading into SEC play and coming out of that started non-conference stretch?
I don't think there's any switch. I think it's the same game. We've prepared well enough. And at the end of the day, it's really not who you're playing, but how well you prepared.
Yeah, and to back off what Derek said, I mean, there's a little bit, I think, more intensity. Not really with how you play, but it's just who you're playing a little bit. Because, you know, it doesn't really matter what happened in non-conference now. This is the real season. And so just going in there, but treating it like every other game, that's what matters.
Will, we've seen over the course of the last 3 or 4 years even where roles and defining roles on the staff has been so important. It shows up in big leagues. For you guys, it's there. You know, guys have their own kind of – how important is that heading into a season where you guys have these defined roles and a lot of depth on the pitching staff too?
No, yeah, it's really important. I'm glad you hit on the depth part because I think that's one of our strong suits on our pitching staff. We have a lot of guys that can do a lot of stuff, but the way Teef and BT and Fox, they have it set up is really nice. And, you know, when you're in the game, you don't have to wonder really when you're coming in. It's just a matter of when. So Knowing like what role you have and what you're going to do in that game, it's really important just to have that in the back of your mind.
Derek, what have you seen out of Gavin Miller, and do you feel like he's a guy that's really stepped up and, you know, really pushing for a permanent role there in the infield?
Yeah, I'm just super proud of Gav. He's been working hard the whole year, and just to see him shine has kind of put a smile on my face. I love Gav and just super excited for him to keep going.
Similar question for you, Will, about Cam Tilley and what you've seen from a true freshman in his first taste of college baseball.
Yeah, I mean, what he's doing right now is incredible, right? I mean, he's going out there, and you don't think he's a freshman when he's out there. And just every time he wants the ball, and that's – I mean, it's not typical as a freshman. And so every time you see him out there, you know that we're in good hands. And just the way he goes about his stuff is really – it's really awesome as a freshman. And, yeah, he's going to do big things.
Derek, obviously you've seen Vandy a bunch in your career. When you think Vandy pitching, what comes to mind for you when knowing how to prepare for and getting ready for this weekend?
Yeah, I definitely think those guys are going to compete with their stuff. You know, they're pretty solid, and you know they're gonna come right at you. Usually have some good velo, but you know, just kind of falling back on what we've done in the cages and the weight room, just kind of focusing on doing our thing.
Derek, what's it like adjusting to playing on a field turf like Vandy has, and have you played on that before?
Yeah, so I played on it my freshman year. It was a fast turf because it's been kind of older, so it's kind of been beaten down a little bit. So it's just the balls roll a little quicker and all that. So it's definitely an adjustment, but it's not a hard adjustment.
Comments from a couple of players, Derek Fabian, Will Cannon. We've got some Butch Thompson we'll let you hear a little later, but we need to get to our bottom of the hour break. There is a timeout on the court. Auburn up 30 over South Carolina, 72-42. Stick with us here on the Friday Drive.
.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Friday afternoon. Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls. Is this the under eight timeout? At 4.5 minutes to go. South Carolina called a timeout a little while ago. There's a media timeout with 4.5 minutes to play, and Auburn is up 30, 76-46. Jani Broome with a double-double, and Auburn just completely dominating South Carolina team.
First stoppage since...
Well, South Carolina called a timeout under 7, and I guess they didn't count that as the under 8, and there hasn't been a stoppage. They're letting them play.
Yeah, I mean,
they are letting them play.
It's been a you know a back and
long
forth
time.
Back and forth second half without a ton of fouls or stoppages. Auburn up 30, under 5 minutes left in the game. Auburn looking like they're going to play South Carolina, looking like they're going to play Mississippi State.
Yep.
Who upset Tennessee tomorrow and did it convincingly.
They did. There was no doubt about that. Never trailed.
Pulled away in the early in the or late in the first half. Grew the lead to 19. And then and really
led by as many as 23.
Yeah, just held Tennessee off the second half.
I thought the perfect depiction of the day for Tennessee was there in the last 30 seconds when Tennessee got the ball back and Mississippi State just cleared out and let Dalton Connect take off at the free throw line and miss a dunk. I mean, it was just that kind of day for Tennessee, and the defense for Mississippi State was phenomenal.
And as great as Dalton Connect was, SEC Player of the Year, deservedly so, led Tennessee in scoring as Tennessee won the outright championship. He can shoot them out of a game playing like that. We saw it against Mississippi State.
Yeah, Zakai Ziegler's the guy that tried to bring him back.
I don't know if I don't know if a lot of teams can emulate defensively what State was able to do and count on.
No, you're right.
Such a bad game from Connect, but Connect was 4-17 today, and State was able to really use a lot of that to.
Auburn's a team that can do a little of that because what State had was 6'7", 6'8 guys all over Connect. Cameron Matthews was phenomenal today, but they've got Tolu Smith and Bell. I mean, they've got long guys. DJ Jeffries handling the ball very well, and then Josh Hubbard. Tennessee, anytime they left him open, he was like draining threes. I mean, State is a dangerous team. When they're playing well, they got after it better defensively today than I've ever seen them.
Yeah, that's going to be a State Auburn tomorrow. The rubber match. Both teams won at home this regular season.
I think a big advantage for Auburn tomorrow is the fact that it'll be State's third game in 3 days, and Auburn will be going on back-to-back days with a little more depth. State plays a few players, too. They play 8 or 9. Auburn plays 10.
You got to be brimming with confidence after dismantling Tennessee, though.
Sure.
Like, I mean, for Mississippi State.
You think Auburn's lacking in confidence now either?
I think Auburn came into this tournament with confidence, playing some of the best basketball they played all season. I just look at Mississippi State, and I think, while it's true that this is an extra game for them, you know, they've been playing since Thursday, I would think that they look at this as, you know, whatever they can muster tomorrow. You know, Auburn's going to get, I would expect Auburn's going to get something resembling their best shot, because they just they just came off of, I mean, now, you know, they've got to be full of belief, especially early in the game.
Oh, yeah.
Full of belief that they can do the impossible after what they just did to Tennessee. And Tolu versus Jani. Versus Jani inside. Going into the season, they looked like the two best posts in the conference.
Tolu only had like 7 points, 4 rebounds today.
Right, but he's still, you know, such a presence.
But he was a huge factor defensively.
Inside, yeah. When you think about Tennessee usually wins points in the paint by a considerable margin. That wasn't the case today, largely because State has a guy like Tolu patrolling the basket.
All right. As we mentioned, Auburn baseball in Nashville taking on Vandy. And Butch Thompson met with the media yesterday, and we'll let you hear his comments as the Tigers get ready for the SEC opener.
Yeah, our baseball team's excited about going to Vanderbilt to start conference play. Be a lot of Auburn up there with the basketball team in the SEC basketball tournament. So a lot of excitement in that area, a lot of excitement for the Auburn fans, and hopefully some of the family can find their way over and watch a baseball game or two this weekend as well. So a great Vanderbilt team, looks like a consensus top 10 national ranked team. That's how we'll start off conference play for the first couple of weeks, but all 10 weeks always feel the same with the challenges that are ahead and high quality. So we'll get started off with a ball club that's played really well. Just pitching, I've always thought of Vanderbilt from a pitching standpoint. Again, just looking at some metrics of really us. The only thing I brought was our roster today, because I'm still focused on us more than others. But if you take a little glance at Vanderbilt, and we were looking at some stuff with us, with our fastballs, especially the four-seam fastball variety, how our fastballs have been good, but we can feel like we can pitch better. That was a consistency message we gave to our pitching staff, and you just stumble on. Oh, again, out of 300 schools, who would be up top, and Vanderbilt would land there again, and they do. So real arms. I think the only difference for our guys, if you ask me what could be different, is I just think the talent of arms over a three-game series could be the difference. I think we've seen good hitters. I think we've seen great arms. But the collection from first pitch on Friday till Sunday, I think Vanderbilt is going to continue to throw talent at us, one right after the other, linked up. So that'll be the challenge for our offense, is to just stay consistent and relentless in their at-bats, and then wake up Sunday and see where we're at. But I'm looking for, again, talent like always on the mound. A couple of guys can really steal bases. We'll probably need to work some short game stuff, get up there, practice today on the turf. I think it's essential. On sliding into bases, running bases, fielding the ball. You can actually use the turf if you get caught in a six-hole and have to throw a baseball. So all those are things that, for us to get acclimated, I think this is our first game on turf this year, and we usually get some reps on that just naturally through the schedule, but haven't got that yet. So tonight's practice will be important to get some things done in an hour and a half or whatever to get ready for a great series.
Which kind of, what's the plan for you in terms of pitching and how you guys will approach the weekend?
Yeah, you've heard the word openers and stuff. I would love for guys to go full starts. I think we're putting guys, we took Joseph out, of course. Everything's been positive. I think the last piece for Joseph is just within himself. I think with getting over surgery, getting comfortable, getting a rhythm going. I think he's in a good place. I think this last step he has to take himself. And we're here for him and every resource we got. But at some point in time, a player has to take that next step. It was good enough and it was believable enough, and we're behind it enough that we'll plug him back in Sunday. We'll keep Myers in game two like we did last week. There's still some things he's working on that needs to improve and get better. And then that'll mean also we'll be in that consistent spot there in game one. You know, what determines moving forward will be, again, off a collection of what you see this week. This midweek, we threw some of our guys just to get work, like a bullpen, competitive, in a game. And I thought it was the best pitch game that we had this year, landing our off speed. I thought Will Cannon was the best he's been this year. Armstrong was only an inning, but it was exciting. And Bauman finished the ball game up. So before you start moving those pieces to other parts of the rotation, we're going to give this crew that's worked hard. And so it's been pretty consistent outside of taking Joseph out for that day. And, you know, Herbert Holtz, you know, some of these guys, Herbert Holtz, Watts, some of these guys have kind of got to step in and elongate if we need them, if one of our starters don't get as deep as we want. But I think we'll stay kind of where we're at, not be changing roles yet, but be open to that moving forward. But, you know, we believe this is our best path of keeping everybody in the job that they've been preparing for and working for to go Alsop and Myers and Gonzalez this weekend.
Now, you've had some guys under the weather. Does it look like you've got pretty much everybody available?
I think they're back. I just, you know, even Bobby Pierce took batting practice Tuesday. He did go with us to Huntsville. But he seemed to be hit the worst, you know, until Tuesday. I hadn't really seen him since like 1 minute Friday. So they took him away from us. Weiss was out, did not travel. He's back. And so I think they'll be available to play. I do. Bill, the thing is, Bobby's missed some at-bats for over a week now, and, you know, batting practice doesn't get you ready for a game. And they might play great. He might get seven hits on Friday night. But from a coach's standpoint, you're just like, okay, they're back, but are they 100%? Are they in rhythm the way they worked hard to get in rhythm with playing a bunch of games? So it's going around. Cooper McMurray was hit hard and didn't miss a beat. So this thing – for whatever reason, what's went through us has affected people differently. And I know I'm rambling, but I think it should be note made in the past. We've struggled in those moments that we need to stay healthy to be competitive and stay competitive. Carter Wright, the two games he caught Sunday and Tuesday, you didn't even know he was back there. That's how good he was, catching the ball, throwing the ball, working with Teef, and he hadn't really had a meaningful – inning of catching yet and jumped right in there. Caden Green jumped right in at shortstop, hit a home run, got a double play ball there in the first inning. It was just amazing for us. I was really proud to see some guys step up and play well, not just fill a hole of a guy being out that you set as a starter and playing every day, but some depth come in there and play at a high level. Gavin Miller's had a good run here. So I think it's really important to mention those three guys. And Hopefully our guys are back, play at full speed. But I love how the depth played. From when we played Air Force to Tuesday, that was very concerning moments there with some guys being out. But the guys have hung in there, and hopefully we can turn the corner, but there may be some linger to it. We'll find out as we get back on the bus this morning and head to Nashville.
Yes, you mentioned Gavin Miller. You've talked about players making the lineup for you. Is he a guy that is pushing for a more consistent starting position right now?
I think so. He hit the big home run, I think, against Austin Peay, if I'm not mistaken. And then I think he had two hits the other night, and I thought he had another grand slam, to be honest with you, to left field. He got loft. He got the ball up to the pool side to left field. Didn't leave the yard, but, you know, it was just a few feet from it, and so we really put that in the good at-bat category. So he's played good. He's handled his balls. He's dominated routine at third base, and that makes a huge difference. I think he's earned more. We got Eric Guevara that potentially could come back in a couple of weeks, so that'd be another infielder to add to the mix. He's a guy that we initially thought would be out for the entire season. We hadn't had that surgery. I know it's a foot, football, basketball, they can have that knee surgery. We just haven't had it. I haven't been a part of that in 30 years. And we thought he was out for the year, but it looks like he might be able to be in a good enough place to – can we get him in the mix somehow? So it's what looked thin going into the fall looks like a fuller, more deeper position around that infield than it was. So, but Gavin's earned a lot. Fabian made the most of it when he got in there 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it looks like Miller's following suit in that same manner.
I guess just kind of going back to the midweek, Connor, and I know you mentioned, you know, you think that was one of your guys' better pitching games so far. What have you seen out of him in those midweek starts? And then also, is he somebody who you might want to try to get some experience against the SEC coming up, or do you want to kind of keep him set in that midweek role?
Have you bugged my locker room or bugged my car or something? What he's done that our guys can learn from is being able to land it. I mean, he's got a pitch. He's got probably a mid-80s. Breaking pitch slider, he can slow it down, it's bigger, he can speed it up and it's sharper than a dart, if you will, and he can land it. And it's just, it's not giving up a lot of hits right now. So it's really about getting a recipe. Like, I think Joseph can get in that flow. I think when you see, man, hitters are sometimes, that's who they are. They can get better with the strike zone and a few little things, but like hitters are born, you know, and they've always hit. A pitcher, if you can stay in a fight, they can absolutely create a recipe. And you can see electric arms just flow. You can see guys are like, don't have as much talent, but if they have a recipe, they're tough. He would be probably the top of the heap of like, if you made an adjustment in the rotation, it would be him. And that'd be the most viable option that you would have from what you just seen. If the players are making the lineup out, then he might be the next man up. So we'll see how this weekend goes, but that's a really good point. And that would be really interesting at the end of the weekend. You're riding back from Vanderbilt. If you felt like you needed to make a move, you know, you'd probably do something different Tuesday because he has done an amazing job. And I don't want to discount Tuesday. That's one of the reasons why we hadn't made a move. How important are those midweeks that this program has learned the last couple of years to be competitive in those, because it builds a resume and it's very important. So, but you can't deny how he's pitched. And I don't know what it was, one or two hits the other night. We got a lot going on. We're either playing every day or on the road recruiting. There's a lot going on, so everything's getting jumbled for me a little bit. But he's pitched like a guy that deserves to pitch on the weekend, and I'm trying to create value and consistency and telling them every day matters a whole bunch. But conference does start, and I'm aware of that. And those are things we're tracking on. So that's why I said you must have my locker room bugged or something.
Is Cam Tiller a guy that's also in the mix to be a star potentially, or do you really like what he does for you guys in the bullpen?
Yeah, I think if you want to be I'm going to say the C words can change as you go through a year, but if you want to be a competitive team in this league, that middle of the game, that back end of the game is important. And if you have a leak somewhere, and if you go start chasing these leaks everywhere, I think he's done a phenomenal job. And, you know, I think right now, Brian, what I want Cam Tilley to do is keep doing an amazing job right there behind a starter, because that is a huge, huge piece, a huge role. And so before I ask him to do something else, I want to be competitive on game one of an SEC series, inning 1 to 9, maybe more. Same thing Saturday, 1 to 9, 1 to 9. And I think a Tilley, a Bauman, a Cannon, an Armstrong, hopefully Watts is moving towards that. These guys work so hard on a roll. I don't want to change it now when every piece of these games are important, the beginning, the middle, and the end. So, again, another viable option. But I kind of like the McBride thing as I'm going in my head, because that doesn't affect roles on the weekend. So, but is he good enough? Absolutely. Because everybody thinks they're a starter. But this is a Southeastern Conference. This is the best amateur baseball on earth. And what can happen out of here, out of a bullpen, and you're wanting to be a major leaguer or something like that, Cam Tilley could walk that road. He's a long way from it, but he could. And I refer back to 2022 recently, where we can have a guy in a bullpen, a guy finishing games, and you can still go in a second round. I've had a first rounder out of the bullpen in Southeastern Conference. This is a conference where if you can just handle a role and dominate it and do it and be competitive in this league, you don't necessarily have to start. This is that one league where that's proven. There's a track record of, I can say, you still can go as high or higher than you would have went in another role, and throwing out of the bullpen is respected professionally here in our league. So I feel like he's in a good way, and I don't want to mess with it right now with Cam Tilley, and I hope he's able to do this same thing as we start up this weekend.
That is Butch Thompson, who spent some time with the media yesterday. Auburn and Vandy opening up SEC play, their SEC play tonight. Auburn wins by 31, so it was an anomaly that they won by 40. My goodness. We are back to wrap things up for hour number one here on the Friday Drive.
Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in as we wind things down for hour number one. 86-55, Auburn eliminates South Carolina. Another dominating performance by the Tigers. 25-7 on the season, all 25 wins by double figures. Speaking of double figures, a basket by Katie Johnson gave Auburn three players in double figures. Again, let's see, 11 different players scoring for Auburn today. Led by Janai Broome with another double-double. He had 18 points. 11 for Chaney Johnson, 10 for KD Johnson. But then Aiden Holloway with 9. 8 for Chad Baker-Mazzara. 7 for Denver Jones and Dylan Cardwell. All right, Brett, hang on.
The Auburn fan with the book sort of looks like John Malkovich.
It's pretty funny. All right, we need to get to our top of the hour break. Brett will get us started when we come back for hour number two.
The following is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Friday Drive. Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls as the Auburn basketball team with a dominant win over South Carolina. Two meetings, Auburn has won by a combined 71 points. This time, 31-point win, 86-55 over South Carolina today in the quarterfinals of the SEC basketball tournament. That following Mississippi State eliminating the number one seed by 17, 73-56 in the first game. Welcome into hour number two of The Drive. We'd love to hear from you. And we've got Brett, who's been hanging on since before the top of the hour. So let's go ahead and get right to The Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Hey, Brett.
Hey, Bill. I got to say, those unbelieving, naysaying Auburn fans who said Auburn wasn't going to beat South Carolina by 40 were certainly right, weren't they?
Yeah, as was Lamont Paris, who said it was an anomaly. It's that obviously proves that Auburn only won by 31.
Yeah, well, if they were out looking for blood, then we need to have a blood drive because there wasn't.
They need
blood
to find a bloodhound. You're right. Yeah.
You ain't kidding. Yeah, I feel like Auburn fans need to finally have a little optimism. I mean, Auburn's a good team. All this talk about why Auburn can lose a game, how about we talk about why they should win the next game? But do y'all realize Mississippi State has four guys who the last 2 days have played 30 minutes or more, and Hubbard and Jeffries have played 34 or over?
Yeah, that's what I was saying a little while ago. That's the big, big advantage Auburn has with the depth they have and State playing its third game in 3 days.
Yeah, and I was stunned with the ease with which they took apart Tennessee, and it's just hard to play that well 2 days in a row, too. Like, I mean, we'll see. I mean, Auburn played really well today too. So you know, you're getting two teams that have to be like we were saying earlier in the show, Brett. Both of these teams have to be full of confidence with the way they've played thus far in Nashville. But I would think that at some point the bill comes due. At some point the miles catch up to a team having to play extra games in the tournament, and I think that could be tomorrow for Mississippi State.
No doubt. And hey guys, last thing. It sure would be nice to get another win tonight, if you know what I mean.
Oh yeah. Well, the Gators didn't play that well yesterday when they beat Georgia, but I still think they're a difficult matchup for just about anybody, including Alabama.
Y'all have a great evening.
All right, Brett, appreciate the call. 334-321-1390. That's the drive hotline. You can call us on that.
I'm thinking chalk tonight, probably Kentucky and Bama, if I had to guess.
Right. Yeah, I would think.
But at the same time, like Florida has you know,
Florida's got a better shot of upsetting Bama than A&M does.
Florida played Bama very close in Tuscaloosa, beat them convincingly in Gainesville. So I mean, it's a Florida team that can bring it. A&M Kentucky should be a lot of fun. I can't wait to see what that game looks like when the show's over. That game starting. It's supposed to start. I mean, I guess
that's 6 o'clock.
Yeah, I guess they should be.
They
able to start
it on time. Yeah, they empty the arena, and they'll then have the evening session. So it'll start on time.
Drive text box 334-564-1840. You can text us. That is presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, and they also sponsor the podcast. Available however you listen to podcasts. Go to your favorite podcasting platform, search for The Drive with Bill Cameron, or go to ESPNAU.com and use the podcast center.
Just underway in hour number two of The Drive, which is brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. Let's get back to The Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar, and Mitch is up next. Hey, Mitch.
Hey guys, I thought that was pretty clever the way you went to the Butch Thompson interview so you could watch the end of the game in the studio, guys.
Well, it was partly a little bit of that, but I figured we also figured most listeners were probably also watching the end of the ball game.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, I wasn't. I was driving, but I thought I'd just bust your chops a little bit. Question about this new 14-team football playoff now. Uh-huh. Is the bracket going to look like the 14-team bracket they use for the SEC basketball tournament?
No. No, they're only going to be, I mean, at least.
It's two byes, right?
At least the way it was presented would be two byes, and then you play, you know, the other 12 teams play to get you six, and then those six and the two that had byes then have a regular eight-team playoff.
Okay. I mean, is there anything online showing what that bracket would look like? You know,
fourteen to eight to four to two. Yeah. would be the easiest way to describe
here's
that.
Here's the way it should be: is three would play 14, four plays 13, five plays 12, you know, and so forth.
Right.
And that gets you six teams. And then those six meet the two. Those six take on the top two. The one seed would play the winner of 5-12, just like basketball. Once you get past the first round,
yeah. I'll tell you what, if you can picture an eight team tournament bracket,
right.
The top two teams are automatically in to the quarterfinals. The other 12 teams are having to win
a game
to get one of those six spots.
Right.
Okay. Now. Are they going to do any games on campus, like one game, two games?
I think the first two games would be, hopefully you're doing well, Mitch. Mitch's a little shaken up there at the end of that.
I think just the first game.
I think that's right. I thought it was the first two rounds for some reason.
The talk was the teams that got the bye didn't get a home game.
That sounds right.
You to eight, so that's really three games, you know, to 4-2, and then for a championship that you would play.
Okay. All right, guys. That's all I got. Where are you? We'll talk to you soon.
Great stuff, Mitch.
Appreciate the call. Because, I mean, in a 12-team, the first round, you know, 12 team, you've got more buys, but you still have that first round and you're getting to eight. So once you get to eight, I believe the plan is then you go to predetermined sites. 334-321-1390. You know, we haven't really seen many more details, just that the 14-team playoff appears to be back on. It sure seems like everything else that had been mentioned in the first reports of the 14-team playoff would be the same, with three automatic bids for the SEC and the Big Ten, two each for the ACC and the Big 12, and then we saw the information about the money that would be going to those teams as well. So yeah,
and I you know, I'm a big fan of the idea of a group of five playoff and sort of the group of five breaking away. But if you read the story about the new deal, it even sounds like that was broached by the commissioner of the American when he said, you know, this deal absolutely stinks for the group of five teams right now compared to when you think about how much money the playoff is going to generate from the broadcast partners and how much of that money is staying in the SEC and Big Ten. And not going to it's not being distributed evenly to the top schools, but then when you get into, you know, very little is left for, I mean, it's a small increase from what's currently coming in the playoff to what some of these group of five programs are going to start getting. I guess there was talk of, you know, let's fight this thing, let's threaten to walk, let's use what leverage we have, and
they can't afford to.
Yeah, it just I don't know. That also is maybe a sign that, like, if there was a group of five playoff, as cool as I think it would be, I wonder if there's much of an appetite from a broadcast network to shell out and guarantee a lot of money to participants in something like that, because it I imagine they would explore those options, you know, if they had that kind of leverage, and it sounds like it sounds like they don't.
334-321-1390. That is the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. Love to hear from you. Get your thoughts on Auburn's big win today. Just looking at some of the numbers there in the box. Another great assist to turnover day. 18 assists for Auburn. 5 turnovers. And 2 of those turnovers are team turnovers, as Auburn... I said it while we were watching it, Dan. I bet Auburn has 10 turnovers on the season from just dribbling the clock down to zero with a huge lead at the end of games, because they won every single ball game by double digits.
Yeah, and I guess Bruce would rather do that than, you know,
you don't want to rub it in.
Well, no, he'd rather preserve the field goal percentage, you know, so don't try like an intentionally bad shot at the end of the game to launch something up. So, when you win, what this becomes the 25th win by at least 10.
Yeah,
and I think it's in the Auburn. It's a little more than half of those are by 20. Quite a few games by not just 10 plus, but 20 plus. So yeah, when that happens, you've got reduced minutes for your starters, which shows up on the box score and the stat sheet over the season. And some possessions at the end of the game where you're just trying to go home.
Jani Broome, the only Auburn player to play more than 20 minutes. He played 21.
That's amazing.
No Auburn player had more than one turnover. Auburn shot 50% in the first half and was 17 of 35 in the second half after getting off to a 1-for-11 start. That'll tell you how well Auburn was shot 67% after the first 4 minutes of the second half for the rest of the game. Auburn 9 of 19 shooting threes. Another game that Auburn over 40% from outside the arc. They are really shooting well as they head into the quarterfinals tomorrow. 334-321-1390. Who was it? Jeff? Hey, Jeff.
Hey, guys.
How you doing, Jeff? Hey, good to hear from you, bud.
Great win today. Wow, what a dominating performance. Oh my God. I was a little nervous with this game. Not that the talent was equal, but just from a mental perspective, but they put that to rest early today.
Oh, yeah, no question. Well, you know, it was a little bit of a slow start. Remember, it was like a 3-2 or 5-4 game 4 or 5 minutes in, and then Auburn just, when they hit a shot, they went on one of those 11-0 run kind of things, and they all but put the ball game away there, in the middle of the first half.
Yeah, once it got the double digits that I was saying, I said, I see no way South Carolina. They just don't have enough offensively. With this team, my Lord, this must have been great coaching, because I don't see the talent on this South Carolina team. Gosh, how did they win some of the games they won this year?
They rely on defense. They really do, and they want to also make the opposition play defense for 25 seconds before they take shots. The thing is, Auburn also is very, very good defensively, and you kept seeing Auburn getting hands in there. They contested every single shot and made it very difficult for South Carolina. And when South Carolina is not built to come from behind.
No, not at all. They have a bunch of bruisers inside, but their perimeter game was lacking. So, well, we're glad for this depth today. We got to get Jalen Williams going. He looked very disinterested today. I don't know what was going on with him.
It's funny. I mean, Jalen hit a three a few minutes into the game during that first run. Only took one other shot for the rest of the ball game. He did have 5 rebounds and a couple of blocks, but he didn't. He really didn't have the ball very much. And I don't know if South Carolina was trying to stop him. Remember, he really went off. He had 20 plus and hit 5 threes against South Carolina. Maybe they were making an extra effort, perhaps to keep the ball away from him.
Yeah, I don't think the plus minus suggests that he was a hindrance.
He was plus 14.
Yeah, I mean, I think he was still pretty good. I mean, Chaney played very well when he stepped in. But I mean, I'm not worried about Jalen.
Yeah, I think he'll be fine next game. But wow, Chris Moore. Wow, I didn't see that coming.
He got off to a quick start himself. Yep.
Wow, great depth on this team. I tell you what, not to sound like a homer, but if a team is going to beat this Auburn team, they're going to have to bring it. Auburn has to have just an unbelievable bad day for that entire rotation to be off. I like our chances down the road.
Oh, yeah, I do. I mean, especially the way they're shooting it now. They've got confidence shooting the ball. They just don't turn it over very much. Teams
That's
try to
key.
Press them. I mean, it doesn't seem to bother them. If they turn it over 10 times, that's a bad game.
That's the key. I think these two point guards are playing great. They're not scoring a lot, but they're doing exactly what they need to do. They're controlling that tempo. And Holloway is a very underrated defender. I watch him play.
He's gotten so much better.
He's a bulldog on defense.
Yeah.
He's another guy, even when the box score didn't look good, Holloway's plus minus was consistently it consistently justified his playing time, even when the shots weren't falling. And I think some of that's because he is a tough perimeter defender. He's got quick hands. He doesn't take a lot of chances. And it was evident today too.
Yeah, you may think and neither one of them had a big ball game, but Aiden and Trey today, Jeff, combined for 14 points, 6 for 11 from the floor, 2 out of 3 from 3, 6 rebounds, 5 assists, no turnovers.
Wow, I'll take that.
No kidding. You'll take that from your point every single night.
Every single night. I look forward to tomorrow. It'll be another battle with Tolu. I tell you what, if we just let this kid Hubbard, oh, my God, wouldn't I love to have him on my team.
Man,
this
he can shoot it, can he? Yeah.
He plays nothing like a freshman.
No. I'm still a little surprised he wasn't the freshman of the year.
Wow, unbelievable. But I love our chances tomorrow. I don't think State has enough bodies. I think the 3-day toll will take its toll on them tomorrow.
That's usually when it shows. Appreciate it, Jeff. Let me correct myself. I was looking at the plus minus. Auburn did. Janai still did play the most minutes in 25. You had 22 for Aiden, 21 for Chad, and then 20 each for Jalen and Denver.
Still amazing the way they were able to distribute the minutes.
Yep. All right, we'll get to our first break of hour number 2. Love for you to join in. We also have some audio with football players and coaches as Auburn tomorrow will wrap up week 2 of spring football practice. But your calls come first here on The Drive.
Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, 22 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Friday afternoon.
Bob Dylan in Athens tonight, as a matter of fact, in Athens, Georgia, tonight at the club. We're just talking about that off
the air. I hope he's not doing the same show that we saw in Birmingham.
I think he's doing the show. I believe he released an album at some point.
Doing some of those.
I think he's I don't think he's doing classics. I don't think he's doing.
See, that's a sad thing. Yeah, that's what you want to hear. Some of the things that you know him for.
See, I think he's still in the mindset of he will throw in as a surprise a cover or a classic from the 60s or something.
I want to hear, like a Rolling Stone.
But I believe a lot of this is in support of the most recent stuff he's done. He's put out 2 albums in the last 4 or 5 years. I think he also did like a soundtrack album for a small film. And I believe the tour he's doing right now is largely in support of and playing that music. But he also might throw in, he might pick up the harmonica and do Mr. Tambourine Man or something if he feels like it.
One of the things
you have to know a million songs to be in his band, probably, right? Because you never know Bob Dylan might be in the mood to do.
Yeah, I mean, well, one of the things that I'm looking forward to on my got a watch list is the Robbie Roberts and Once Were Brothers. With the band, story with the band, with a lot. I mean, there's going to be, I've just read a few of the reviews about it with Dylan and Clapton and other people talking about it. Yeah.
That soundtrack is so good, Flower Moon. And it's Robert, mostly, most of his last, a lot of the last music he will ever have released, right? Because it was released posthumously. But he is, Scorsese collaborator, but that soundtrack to a Flower Moon is just, It is full energy and very cool stuff.
We'd love for you to join in. Give us your thoughts on Auburn's 86-55 win over South Carolina. We've got coming up at the top of the hour, session 2 in the SEC tournament quarterfinals with Kentucky and Texas A&M, followed by Alabama and Florida. So thus far, you have Auburn, the 4 seed, has advanced. Mississippi State, the 9 seed, has advanced, and the 1 and 3 seeds, is that right? The 2 and 3 seeds playing tonight with Kentucky and Alabama. We mentioned it a little while ago. I mean, Florida can be quite the matchup because they have experienced guards and a lot of length inside. For Alabama, it's all about do they shoot it well or not. If they shoot it well, they can beat anybody. If they don't, they can be run off the court.
See, and I'm thinking even in games where Alabama shot it well, they've given up too many points, right? Like it's a question of what kind of defense are they going to give you? Because
it's the same thing you think about Kentucky. Although Kentucky is really rolling right now.
Yeah, and Kentucky I think has given you more examples of their ability to play good defense against good teams. Kentucky when they played Tennessee or went to Neville. They were able to for extended periods of time play impressive defense. You don't have that in conference play with Alabama.
That. No, not I mean maybe a time or two.
Not to rule it out, but yeah, they're gonna need to play the best defense they can and hope the offense stays as hot as it's been.
And they're going against 2 teams that usually aren't the easiest to score against. A&M, especially with Buzz Williams.
You think
nice to see Buzz getting away from the suits, isn't it?
I kind of like college basketball coaches in suits.
I felt so uncomfortable for Buzz because, like Bruce, he works so hard that he needs to change suits at halftime.
I sort of dig the, especially if they want to wear them. Like I like the flexibility that we now have post COVID. You go back and watch like even 18 and 19 NCAA tournaments when everyone is rocking, including Bruce.
Oh yeah,
is rocking the full 3 piece.
But that's so hot.
It's warm. It ties. You know, yeah. It's a tough one. But I I would think that the Bama, the I mean Bama. What do you think the Bama presence is going to be like tonight? You think it's a big Bama crowd in that last game?
Kentucky
has a lot of those tickets.
Yeah, you're right. Kentucky does. Now there are a lot that have opened up with Tennessee being knocked out. And that's one of the things Chris Jans was imploring on the post game that hey. It's not that far a drive. Come on in. There are plenty of tickets available. And you're absolutely right because Tennessee fans thought they were making a run. This is a year they're going to make a big run. Now, it's not the NCAA tournament. But, yeah, Rick Barnes has had trouble getting deep in tournaments. But there will be plenty of tickets available. Auburn fans, hey, if you're thinking about driving to Nashville, yeah, look for some of that Tennessee orange. There should be some tickets available for tomorrow's matchup against Mississippi State.
I mean, State hasn't won the conference tournament since that team in, what was it, 08 or 09 that kind of went on a bit of a surprise run. I think Jarvis Vernado was on a tournament champion team. But they don't have very many tournament championships. I know it's been Chris Jan said at some point this year that it's been over 20 years since they've won the regular season championship at Mississippi State in the SEC. So yeah, it's not as though, especially this last decade or so, has been a golden era for Mississippi State basketball. Here they are in the semifinals of the SEC tournament tomorrow. Maybe maybe they can come out of this thing with a ring. I understand why Chris Jans is imploring anyone within the sound of his voice.
He wants all the cowbells he can that folks can sneak in to the arena
and
tomorrow.
And you know what? And parts of Mississippi where Mississippi State is a very popular program aren't that far from Nashville. You're
that is
right.
True.
You can make that drive pretty easily tonight or tomorrow morning.
All right, 334-321-1390. We've got some football audio. I tell you what we'll do to sort of stay on track. We'll go ahead and get to break a little early. We're going to let you hear Vontrell King-Williams, who has, been promoted to the defensive line coach. A lot of talk about defensive line. We'll let you hear from him when we come back here on the Friday Drive.
Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Friday afternoon. Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls. And since we don't have any calls at the moment, we mentioned Auburn football. Tomorrow we'll wrap up week two of spring practice. And it is year one with Vontrell King-Williams promoted to defensive line coach, replacing his mentor and close friend, Jeremy Garrett. And we had an opportunity, the media had a chance to spend some time with the King just a couple of days ago and thought we'd let you hear some of his comments.
Well, here we go. What's it like stepping in and being the guy now after, getting this opportunity?
Yeah. To be honest, it don't feel much different. I've been involved in those guys' lives, and I've been coaching them, and I've been around, and so I know most of the guys, and I've had a hand in recruiting all the guys that are here, and so it doesn't really feel any different. Of course, the biggest difference is now it's all on you, and the great thing is that I have a great assistant, and Coach Brett Coker, and we work hand in hand, and our relationship is just about the same as how mine and Jeremy was, that's probably the biggest difference, but it still feels the same.
Tell me what JG meant to you, like professionally and personally.
I'll start with personally. JG was like my best friend. When he left, I know a lot of people were upset and sad, but I actually shed a couple tears when he, I dapped him up and he left for the building for the final time. That was my guy, and so he was a pivotal part of me coming here. I thought the world of him. Professionally, that guy, I don't know if I learned more about D-line play than this year, this past year that I was with him. He taught me a lot. Taught me a lot about teaching. Taught me a lot about patience and development. He was the rock or one of the main pieces that stood on the table for me to get this opportunity. And so personally, professionally, I love that guy with everything in my body, but I definitely do miss him.
What, I guess,
transitioning to you taking over the defensive tackles, what are similarities that you're going to keep in terms of how you coach for the past with JD? What that might need to do differently?
Yeah. I think where it really comes down to is scheme-wise. And I thought our scheme last year was solid. I think our scheme this year is really, really good because it allows our guys to play with freedom. And, you know, I'm going to continue to be the same guy. I'm going to be energetic. I'm going to be out there yelling and screaming. I'm also going to encourage. You know, that's just who I am. Techniques hadn't really changed much. Everything I learned from JG, I'll be doing the same things. And the great thing about that was that me and JG collaborated. And so if there were things that maybe I knew better or that, you know, that he thought was a good idea for me, we would use those ideas. And so, you know, we built it all together last year. And so it'll kind of be the same deal.
What's it like with Durkin here, this group together, and how has that been so far?
Durkin is awesome. That's probably the first thing I'll start with. He's awesome. You know, when I got a chance to meet him for the first time, and he came in, he wanted to sit me down and he talked to me. He said, "Hey, man, I know you're an analyst, but we're going to count on you big time." And, you know, that conversation went great. And then, you know, getting an opportunity to interview with him and did that interview, and he gave me the immediate feedback. You know, he was another pivotal piece for me getting this job. And so Durkin has been awesome. I think our staff camaraderie has been great, specifically on the defensive side. He's a great leader. He's specific in his teaching, detailed in it. He coaches the coaches. He tells us exactly how he wants things done. And so make sure that we're all on the same page. And that's what's been really good about having him in.
You mentioned freedom. We heard from Freeze when he hired him. He said, "Look, this is a system that I feel like is easy to learn, easy yes. to implement, and lets guys go play." Have you seen that already?
I have. I mean, when you go and you look at guys like Trill Carter or Gage Keys or even some of the younger guys like DJ Reed or Malik Blockton, they're able to make plays right now because this is so simple. And it allows those guys to play with freedom. Now, we're going to teach them the techniques and the nuances of the defense and that you can't, you know, mess up. But at the same time, like, we're not here to just take on double teams and stuff like that. We're going to go and we're going to make plays. And so I think, you know, that's a pivotal piece, especially with getting guys to come in early. And getting young guys to play now, when the system is tough, right? It's hard for incoming freshmen to learn it. It's just the truth of the matter. Like, it's hard for young guys to come in and play year one when it's a tough system. And I think that's probably one of the best things that we have.
Yeah, you're kind of a yeller, but on the practice field anyway.
Oh yeah.
But I feel like you're very positive. Is that a conscious decision you make to, hey, I'm gonna pump these guys up rather than breaking them down?
So I've been coached by a lot of people, and I like to think that some of my coaching styles have been, you know, a mixture of what I like from some of my coaches and what I didn't like. I know that I ran through a brick wall for guys that believed in me and that, you know, gave me positive feedback, and also guys that kept it real with me. And so, you know, while I am encouraging at the same time, it's, you know, sometimes tough love. But when I get on you, I'm going to love on you even harder. And so, you know, that's really been my motto, and that's the way I like to coach.
How would you describe yourself as a recruiter, and then just what is your pitch to these recruits about Auburn?
Yeah, so this is a recruiter. Here's the thing about me. So the recruiting piece is very interesting. I'm going to be myself. I'm not going to sit here and try to sell anything. I'm not going to sit here and try to, you know, be somebody I'm not. I'm going to be myself. And, you know, at the end of the day, if the guys actually like you or that want to play for you, they're going to choose to do that. I'm not going to try to be anything else. And the biggest pitch right now for why Auburn is why not Auburn. Coming to play in D-line here at Auburn is a big deal. And if you look at the way we're building our classes, we're building through the high school ranks, which is not common. You know, this past year, I think we signed one of the best D-line classes in the country. This year, you know, we had, you know, got some good things going, you know what I'm saying? And so we're trying to build it through the high school ranks and to make it sustainable so guys can play now, so guys can play right away. And so, you know, that's really a big piece. But, you know, why Auburn, why not Auburn?
Yeah, you mentioned newcomers.
Yeah.
You mentioned a couple of those guys. What have you seen out of that the transfer group, those older guys that you're counting on to kind of step in and bridge the gap a little bit?
I absolutely love Gage, and I absolutely love Trill. Those guys have been they have done some things that will put them in some good situations. You know, still got to fix some technique things, but those transfers have been, you know, we've hit on those two transfers for sure. And so, you know, of course, you're early in spring, and so you got a small sample size, but with the small sample size that I have seen, those two have been consistent every single day. They've made plays every single day. And the best part about those two, though, is that they're coachable. You can coach them up on something, and they're going to work at it, and they're going to get it fixed. You know, you don't have to tell those guys, like 2, 3, 4 times, hey, we need to get this fixed, we need to work on this. We tell it to them, we go out and work it, and they get it fixed. And so we definitely hit on those two.
That is Auburn defensive line coach Vontrell King-Williams. A little more with him that we can get to, but let's get to the phone. 334-321-1390. And Jack is up next. Hey, Jack.
Hey, Bill and Dan. Good talking to you guys. And thrilled to death with basketball team's performance this afternoon. But back to football, you know, I'm sure y'all talked about it at some point this week, but from what I've gathered, from what I've read and listened to, it sounds like of all the true freshmen that are already on campus and going through spring practice, it sounds like the three guys who are probably the most likely to make an impact this fall would be Cam Coleman, Amaris Williams, and Jamonte Waller.
I agree with that.
Would y'all agree with that?
Yes, absolutely. So far, of the
true freshmen.
Yes.
Yeah, that's probably. I still think there are going to be a lot of snaps out there behind McLeod at edge, and there are a couple of guys.
That's where Waller is.
And
right now.
Yeah, Waller and, you know, Joe Phillips would be a contender as well if he can iron out some of the things.
He's got to learn a little bit some of the intricacies and of being a buck.
McLeod mentioned, you know, that you know some things in the playbook are still. You know, he's still having a grasp.
What do you guys think about slot receiver and Robert Lewis? You think he might emerge as a potential starter there?
It's interesting. Robert has been working more outside right now. Sam Jackson of the transfers is the guy who we've seen a little more in the slot.
And so, I would watch for Burton and Fair of the holdovers from last year, guys that played. I mean, Fair was a topic of discussion throughout Hugh Freeze's first offseason, and then Caleb Burton is somebody that a couple of the players have talked about. You know, he's taken steps forward. He's another guy who, you know, when you switch teams, it's a different kind of offseason than you get to have with a little bit of stability. And this offseason, seemingly, if Caleb Burton stays on the team until August, this would seemingly be a much more stable offseason for Caleb Burton, the one he had last year.
I would also say
recruits. Yeah. If you think about where Caleb Burton was coming out of high school, a lot of potential still.
Keep an eye on Bryce Kane too. He's turning some heads with his ability to. I mean, he's got such an explosive start.
Definitely good to hear. One more question, football related, and I'll hang up and listen. Do you guys know what ever became of Javarius Johnson? He jumped in the portal, but I haven't heard if he wound up at another
Var took an official visit to Utah at some point during the holidays and is, as far as I know, still enrolled at Auburn.
Right. That's the last thing I've heard.
Someone else has his number, as was pointed out this week. Somebody's
Bryce
wearing
King.
I think Bryce is wearing Var's number. I would think that Var is either going to decide to walk away from football, or we're going to get an announcement between now and July about where he's decided to go play one more year as a graduate transfer. I would be surprised. I haven't heard anything about this either way. Just based on the fact that he's not out there now, I would be surprised to see him return to Auburn this fall.
Mm-hmm.
Right, right. All right, guys, good talking to you as usual.
Good hearing from you, Jack. Have a good weekend.
Y'all too.
All right, 334-321-1390. And Jerry is up next. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, guys. I heard you talking about the band earlier. And I saw the band and Bob Dylan in Atlanta.
It's been a minute. Yeah.
Yeah, like 74.
Yeah, wow.
And, it was really cool. The band came out, did a set. Bob Dylan came out and did a solo set by himself. Just, and he was great. And then they did a third set combined.
He's on my he is on my list of artists I need to go to. I mean, because I don't know how many more more tours he's going to decide to do to go on, and yeah, he's a favorite of mine. So I got to check Bob Dylan off the list at some point.
They did a live album.
Oh yeah, and then
double album.
Yeah, the Basement Tapes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Remember that well.
It was cool.
Oh yeah.
All right.
Appreciate it, Jerry. Good hearing from you. Let's get to our final break of the afternoon. If we got a chance, we'll let you hear a little bit more with Vontrell King-Williams. But again, your calls come first here on The Drive.
Inspired by the bold bison, Southern Union students blaze new
drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, final segment here on this Friday. Again, great start for Auburn Athletics today with the 86-55 win over South Carolina in the SEC quarterfinals up in Nashville. Auburn will take on Mississippi State tomorrow. Another 2:30 tip tomorrow. Or is it the first game? No, it's the first game tomorrow, isn't it?
There would not be an earlier game tomorrow.
No, there wouldn't be an earlier one. Let me look at the schedule and see if it has time.
I think it's a 2 o'clock and a later game tomorrow.
No, tomorrow. Tomorrow is noon.
Oh, a noon tip Central. Tomorrow. Okay.
Yep. So it is the first game will
go
noon.
Along. That will go along nicely with a community celebrating St. Patrick's Day festivities all day.
Yeah, there
long.
You go. It's over early.
I think you could have a noon game and that you know that could coast right into the rest of Saturday for a lot of folks here in town. And then if Auburn wins, you got a game Sunday, Selection Sunday. You could have Auburn in the finals, the NCAA.
That should be fun. I mean, we've got baseball coming up tonight over on, let's see.
What's got to go right for Auburn baseball tonight if they're going to beat a
The
game's on Wings, by the way, right? Because there's no scheduling conflict?
Should be, yes.
Yeah, game's on Wings, yeah.
Auburn's got, for the most part this year, they've had a couple of games where they kick the ball around. They can't do that. Playing on artificial turf, the ball's going to get to some guys a little bit quicker. They need to get a good outing from Chase Alsup, who has great stuff, but at times, can't seem to locate the ball where he wants. I think Auburn's lineup is very solid. Butch Thompson was telling us he thinks they've faced some really, really good pitching thus far this year. Now they'll face it throughout this entire series, but I don't think that's going to overwhelm them. But Auburn needs to get a good start from Chase Alsup, play solid defense, they've got a shot. Again, it's a three-game series, so it's not the end. The cool thing is, at least as of them traveling up to Nashville, the plan is Joseph Gonzalez getting the start on Sunday after Alsup tonight. And I'm blanking on the former Sunday starter. I've been his dad, Myers. Carson Myers.
Yeah, Carson. Yeah.
I had to go, his dad was a pitching coach. Matt, yeah.
There's a couple Carson of Carsons, Myers. Right, too?
There are a couple of Connors. There are a couple of Coopers.
Coopers.
Yeah.
New Coop. Shout out to New Coop.
Yeah, and we'll have old Coop or big Coop, whatever he prefers, on with us on Monday. I was going to run a little more of Vontrell Williams, you want to run a little bit more of that?
Just real quick on the bracket. Tomorrow, Auburn, Mississippi State battling for a trip to the finals of the SC tournament. The win today moved Mississippi State. I mean, they're not even a bubble team anymore.
No.
I think they are probably looking at, my guess would be, if they won the SEC tournament.
They won the SEC tournament, I think they're
a seven.
Seven.
They're probably
a
seven.
I'm thinking, yeah.
I would guess that if the, you know, as it stands now, they're in the 8-9 game. Somewhere, Mississippi State not a fun matchup for a one seed.
No, they're
potentially
not. No, they're not because they have length, And they handle the ball well. They've got
I think a one seed would look at what Mississippi State.
They've got a couple of guys that can score.
I think a team like Carolina or Purdue or UConn would look at what Mississippi State just did to Tennessee and think like that's no prize waiting for you in the round of 32 as a one seed. So we'll see what happens.
Tennessee is definitely a two? I do now.
I think Tennessee is a two. I do want to see what happens with Carolina. I think Carolina is going to be your fourth one
if
seed.
If they win the ACC, they're the fourth number one.
Purdue, UConn, and Houston will be one seeds.
Yeah, I think so.
The question is between Tennessee and Carolina and to a degree Arizona, which of those teams can make the case they should be? Arizona's, their conference tournament is over, right? The Pac-12 tournament's over, right?
Isn't it?
No, it's going on right now. UCLA's UCLA just lost to Oregon. That's going on right now. So Arizona could win the Pac-12 tournament and make a case that they're the one seed. It seemed like that was less likely after they got beat by UCLA. That's right. They got beat by USC in the conference final. The last game of the series, the season finale. And so Arizona, Carolina, or Tennessee for that final one spot. I think Tennessee's chances are on.
I think today did not help them. Yeah. They don't have a chance to do anything else. They just need Carolina to just go ahead and get knocked off by Pitt this evening.
I'm thinking Auburn's a four.
I think Auburn is a four. I think it's done. Despite what Jerry Palm may say, Lenardi, I think, has had Auburn as a four, and he said Auburn was going to be a four regardless of what happened today, so I think they should stay at a four. Lenardi's got Texas A&M as one of the last four in. They can, I think, lock their spot in if they beat Kentucky in a game coming up here in just a few minutes.
Texas A&M loss to – Texas A&M loss here would make it very difficult to – I think the committee.
I don't know
the
that you penalize them if they lose to Kentucky.
The committee would have a decision to make as far as what to do with A&M. I think that they're, like I said, the razor's edge.
Right.
I'm thinking that they're solidly in with a win. If a loss, I'm thinking they're
a loss. It's iffy.
They're in the play-in game. It's a big bubble. They might be just out.
Right.
And how unfair, right? For A&M again to be a team that looks so good in the conference tournament, falls just short of an automatic bid. And it's not enough in the eyes of the committee, but I mean, A&M has somebody made the point today. They would have more quad three or four losses than anyone who's ever been selected as an at large in the last 5 or 10 years. It's been a long time since a team with as many bad losses as A&M made the NCAA tournament as an at large team. So if I'm A&M, you're not secure. If you lose tonight to Kentucky.
No, you're sitting there crossing your fingers and hoping everything else goes right for you.
Again.
Yep. All right, we're just about out of time here on the Friday Drive. Well, there's the music. Monday, we will be talking about the bracket and getting people's thoughts on that. We'll know where everything's going. We'll know where Dan's going to be on Monday as well for next week.
That's right. We'll find out. I think I'm, I have a suspicion, but we'll find out on Monday for sure. And yeah, one of the best days of the year, and we get the full bracket and everyone's breakdown. Yeah. Can't wait for it. Have a great weekend, everybody.
And Brian Matthews will be joining us as well. Fun day today. Yeah, even more fun over the weekend. We're out of time for today. Have a great weekend, everybody. We are out of here.